Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this first planning meeting of 2017. I noticed that the last meeting we had was back in August, so we all might be a wee bit rusty. Any apologies?
Oh, I was looking away.
Right, okay.
Councillor Imrie, Councillor Muirhead and Councillor Parry.
In the order of business?
Is as printed in the agenda. Can I just remind members there was a follow paper which was circulated separate from the main agenda.
Any declarations of interest can be made known just now or when the item comes up. Minutes of the previous meeting? Seconder? Okay. Which then takes us on to item 5.1.
Thank you, Chair. This is a report to update the committee on the progress of work undertaken on the planning performance framework for Midlothian. Specifically, it provides feedback from Scottish Government on the Council's submitted planning performance framework for 2015-16. The Council's planning performance framework for 2015-16 was submitted to the Scottish Government on the 29th of July 2016. It provides a comprehensive review of the planning service during the year and highlights positive outcomes in a number of areas, most notably the development taking place on the ground, as well as continued progress in the preparation of the Midlothian Local Development Plan. Formal written feedback was received in November 2016, and a copy is attached to the report. In the feedback report on the 15 performance matters, 4 were rated as green, giving no cause for concern, 4 were rated as amber, where areas for improvement are identified, and 5 areas were rated as red, where some specific attention is required. 2 red items relate to the progress of the Midlothian Local Development Plan, 1 relate to the use of processing agreements, another to the time taken to conclude legal agreements, and 1 relating to the number of legacy cases. Comments on these items are contained within the report in paragraphs 3.5 to 3.16 of the report. Despite these red markers, the Planning Service is currently determining over 80% of its applications within set targets, achieving the targets set by the Scottish Government. It has deposited its proposed plan with the Scottish Government. It continues to provide an easy, accessible and free pre-application advice and duty service to customers and is also successfully implementing a number of conservation-based projects. It is recommended that the committee notes the feedback from the Scottish Government on the Council's submitted planning performance framework for 2015-16 and notes the specific actions being undertaken to address the specific matters of concern.
Thanks, Chair. It was just really a question about the nature of the exercise, because when you read through it, it's maybe just, for me, slightly confusing, because the tone of it is that we as a planning authority are somehow answerable to Scottish ministers, and there's lots of areas where we as a planning authority might work with the Scottish Government, and things like the plan, the strategic plans and all those processes, and that to me makes a great deal of sense. But I suppose my question is, do we have a view on whether this particular approach and the idea that we have to report to Scottish ministers is A, useful for us, and B, whether the criteria that are set out for us to be answerable to are the right criteria? Is this a useful exercise that helps us?
I think, Chair, if you go back a number of years, the planning system was basically measured against how quickly it determined planning applications and whether it had an up-to-date development plan. That was basically the only means of measuring performance. So the introduction of the planning performance framework, or the PPF, is looking to try and look across the board, because the planning service is more than just those two measures. So I think general principle is a sound one to look at a variety of issues as well as just rather than just application of the development plan. Initially, the concept was it was a mechanism where you could actually measure yourself against yourself, so you could see if you were making progress year on year. It was designed that it makes the planning authority, people like myself, accountable to people like yourself and obviously the residents of Midlothian. So that was the concept behind it. It was always initially thought that a copy would go off to the Scottish ministers. I think that's most probably reasonable, but among my equivalents across Scotland, there's maybe a bit of anxiety about the scoring mechanism, the traffic light sort of system. I think if you look back over the years, there's been a lot of progress in Midlothian and other councils in Scotland in terms of their services. So there has been a general progression with planning services, I think. And I personally think that Midlothian's got a good planning service. A lot more improvements can be done, but I think it's a good service. I suppose that's why in the report I've tried to address those red markers, because I feel they don't quite tell the whole picture. So it's important to do that, I think.
Ian.
Thank you, Chair. Two of the areas I'd like to focus on, which are marked as red, are the legal agreements, where the time's taken to conclude a legal agreement has been quite long, and also the legacy cases. And the reason why I see these as being quite important is because if you have a never-ended minded to grant decision, it places blight on neighbours who might be negatively impacted by the development. It also stops other people coming forward with alternative uses for the land, which may be banked. Also, because delaying a final decision on the project until several years after the planning officers have assessed it and the planning committee has deliberated on it, could mean that consent is not based on the current conditions that might have changed significantly since the minded to grant decision was taken. Going back to an old favourite of mine, Cold Hall application, it was made in February 2013, then withdrawn by Hargreaves in 2016. That's 3.5 years. My question is that will that application be included in the 2016-17 statistics, or will it be excluded from the statistics because it was withdrawn? The reason I ask that, and I feel this is a crucial question, is that the Council did not press Hargreaves to withdraw the application but allowed them to continue to stall the negotiations and delay any decision for years. So I feel it would be, given that if that application had still been with us, it would have skewed the statistics quite markedly and would have seen quite a big increase in the amount of time for which these applications are still standing. So I don't believe that should be excluded from the statistics, if so.
Chair, I know the question was about the particular application, but the answer actually relates across the board to other applications as well. In terms of the statistics, they're based on applications where a decision has been made, either a grant of planning permission or a refusal. Any application that was withdrawn, as in the case of Cold Hall Moor, is not part of the statistics, so that doesn't get recorded as in terms of the time period. So when you come forward to 2016-17 statistics, it's just identified as a withdrawn application, but it's not recorded in that means, so it won't impact on the statistics. And that applies not just for Cold Hall Moor, but any application that's withdrawn. In terms of the issue about the time delay, I recognise there's a significant period on a number of applications where there's a time delay, and in the report I outline the main reasons why that is and have suggested some possible means to try and address that, because I have some sympathy with the point that an application can seem to be just sitting for a period of time which may cause uncertainty to local residents or others. I recognise that. You'll most probably see later on one of the applications, there's a recommendation to conclude an agreement within a six-month period, and I've made reference to that in here, that one of the actions is to try and tie people into concluding legal agreements within 6 months, or we come back to elected members, so you're aware of the time delays, and if you want to make a further judgment on the application, you can do. So that's one step of doing that. There's other actions in there which I've referenced to help try and resolve this issue. To date, some applicants choose to sit on applications simply because maybe they're a landowner who's applied for planning permission, but once they've got a resolution to support a scheme, they then go off to the market to maybe look for a house builder or a developer, and of course there's quite a long time delay there. And I suppose up until now we've been quite supportive of the sort of development, especially during the downturn, so you've been trying to be pragmatic and flexible, but I appreciate that it's maybe worth, like I say, trying to rein that in and give a sort of fixed time period to conclude some of that. In terms of general time periods of getting applications to committee, we're quite good at that. It's the legal agreement that's the bit after that does seem to take the time, and we just need to focus the mind and put a time period in place.
Yeah, thanks. If I can just come back on that. Section 3.10 says applicants are now being advised that they risk applications being referred to elected members and potentially refused if an agreement is not concluded within 6 months from the date of resolution to grant planning permission. My question is, therefore, is this advice being given to every applicant where a legal agreement is required? At what stage in the process is that advice given? And what does the risk applications being referred to elected members actually mean? Is it the policy to refer them to elected members, or is it contingent on something else?
It depends on some applications can be referred back to the planning committee. For example, if an application is determined by the planning committee, then the point of referral is back to that planning committee. Other applications, you most probably note that you get circulated applications which are subject to a legal agreement. If they're not a major application, either they're a local application, then they get notified. So that notification process would apply rather than a straight referral back to the planning committee. In terms of when do we advise the applicants, we're pretty well advising them when we start negotiating discussions on Section 75 agreements. And or when an application is starting to look like it is starting to stall. Some applications, for example, don't require a legal agreement, but yet there's still an issue because they're not being progressed. So we've got a time target of determining local applications within 2 months and major applications within 4 months. So once you get to those sort of deadlines, you're starting to think, and officers are thinking, that how do we start to move this on and resolve this? So we're saying it relatively early in the process.
Sorry, if I can just... another question is on 3.16, where it says planning officers are not normally agreeing to leave applications undetermined at the request of the applicant. I'm just wondering what the not normal circumstances are, bearing in mind, again, that's exactly what we did with Colt Hall. What are the abnormal circumstances?
Because they're abnormal, I can't define them, Charles. It's really just give them a sort of... there's hasn't arisen yet, but there's always an exception to the rule. So we just wanted to, rather than putting a sort of blanket, black and white position in the paper there, it was a case that if there is a set of unique circumstances, then we could obviously consider those. I suppose going back to the Cold War Moore thing, that's maybe an application that was running pre these things coming forward and these procedures coming in place. So that's necessarily what's happened there. If that situation was to repeat itself, i.e. they resubmitted, then we'd be into this situation where we would address the time periods.
Sorry, almost finished, yeah. I think what I'm leading up to here is that it seems to me that we're not altogether unsure of the circumstances where we're allowing applications to sort of sit there, determined by the will of the developer, which is the bit that really worries me. And it was brought to my attention that in Edinburgh City Council in 2015 brought in some new policy agreements which look pretty good, and it's something I would like us to look at possibly adopting or not necessarily exactly the same, but in some way ourselves. That what they've adopted is that, first of all applications requiring a legal agreement will be required to complete the legal agreement within 6 months of the minded to grant. Those that don't complete within 6 months will be referred back to the planning committee with a likely recommendation to refuse. That legacy applications with a pending Section 75 that were minded to grant after June 2014 will be written to and given a six-month deadline, bearing in mind this was June 2015 it was introduced. All minded to grant decisions in excess of a year old will be reassessed. That legacy cases over 3 years old will be asked to confirm they are withdrawn, and legacy cases over 10 years old will be automatically withdrawn. I'd like to see us firm up a bit on what we do and really make it clear to developers that when we give them a minded to grant agreement here at this committee, that they cannot just sit on it and allow a situation where neighbours of those sites I just haven't a clue what's happening year after year.
Well, I think we need to look at that, Ian. Would you like to comment?
Yeah, Chair, just to pick on two things. The six-month time period, that's what we're trying to do here. So I'd sign up to that and agree with that. The second point I would make, though, is that the legislation as currently sitting is that it's only the applicants that can withdraw an application. The council can't say it's withdrawn. We encourage them, we invite them to, but they have to do that. So I note what Edinburgh is doing, and we sometimes do that as well, ask applicants to withdraw an application, but at the end of the day, it's within their power to do it and not the planning authorities.
Thank you very much for those answers.
Lisa, do you want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. It's really on point 3.11 that I have concerns, and I appreciate and I do note the final sentence of that reference to the fact that adoption is now primarily in the control of the Scottish Government. But obviously the LDP is of great significance for a lot of people in our communities, and a number of constituents have come to me and asked me, what stage is this now at, as it has very significant ramifications and implications for economic development in particular, which at this moment in time this local authority is working with great endeavour to improve and support. Do we have any appreciable understanding of what the timeline's looking like for this? And is there anything more that this local authority, this planning authority, can do to assist and accelerate that process to a happy conclusion? Thank you.
Chair, the current situation is that the Scottish Minister have appointed a team of three reporters to look at it. The reporters have already been back to the planning authority asking for additional information and clarification. So we've been through that almost administrative type process. So they're now into the detailed examination of the individual points and issues. They've told us that it will be concluded by late spring, early summer. Didn't give an exact date, but they're talking about a May date, so that's the time period. They've said that after they've looked at the initial information, so that's them being informed of the scale of tasks before them, so that's what the timetable they've given us. They've suggested there may be hearings on a number of subjects, but most of the issues can be dealt with by written submissions. So that's where we currently are. If I have any more information from them, which I am expecting in January, February, then I can happily come back to the members on that and update you further.
We'll accept the recommendations then. And we'll move on now to item 5.2.
Thanks, Chair. This is, just members may recall, back in June, we reported a Scottish Government reporter's decision in relation to a hot food takeaway, which was granted by the reporter against the decision of this committee. It was granted by the reporter at a location very close to Lasswade High School, as a consequence of which the committee asked or instructed that I write to the Chief Planner at the Scottish Government and that the Chair write to the Chair of COSLA. You'll see in the papers which are circulated as to follow papers a short cover report and then copies of the correspondence. Whilst there, just for noting, I think it's reasonable that I just maybe add a little bit more to what's in those letters. You'll see there's a reference in the Scottish Government's, the Chief Planner's letter, to a document called Beyond the School Gate, which is easily accessible on their website. What I would say is that if looking at that, whilst it's helpful that the Chief Planner's directed us towards that, that starts out by saying the planning system is often identified as a key route through which local authorities can and should tackle over-provision of food outlets near schools. However, the planning system, as it currently stands, may not readily lend itself to that purpose. Now, that's the opening lines of the element in here, which is to do with planning. And I think it's a recognition that draconian policies in development plans may not necessarily be supported. Notwithstanding that, the document does talk about the importance of development plans in relation to this council's emerging local development plan. There is a policy position which is set out in the document which also provides the basis for supplementary guidance which will be prepared, and that talks about supplementary guidance in respect of food and drink uses and hot food takeaways out with town centres, which is the case with the application and the appeal just referred to, which triggered this. The aim would therefore be to ensure that through this development plan and through supplementary guidance, we could reflect the very clear view that this committee came to in relation to the public policy issue of hot food takeaways in close proximity to schools. Just to mention, though, in terms of supplementary guidance, and it maybe just an opportunity to mention, this is the government white paper, which is published this morning, Scottish Government White Paper, Places, People and Planning, which is, as it says, a consultation on the future of the Scottish planning system. This is a fundamentally important document, which is out to consultation until the 4th of April. I intend to bring a report to the next meeting of this committee on the 28th of February, which will be recommending responses, the Council's responses to this for discussion. And I'm happy to, in advance of that, Chair, to brief members further on the content of this particular document. All I will mention is that I had a chance to read some of it just quickly this morning. There's reference to the potential for no longer having supplementary guidance, that it be all within the actual plan document itself. As I say, this is still a document, a white paper for consultation, but I just thought it was an opportunity to mention that to committee, seeing as it was published this morning. So all in all, the report, Chair, is for noting. We will take very much on board what was clearly the collective view of the committee about the seriousness of the issue of hot food takeaways close to schools, and we will work through the development plan process to try and ensure that we give ourselves as a council the best opportunity to resist hostile applications which are not welcome.
Eric? Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'm really disappointed by the responses that we've got for the Chief Planner. And quite clearly, you can see in Cosler's response, it's quite clear we're not the only council suffering for this, that this is throughout the place. What we effectively have is a body here that's elected by the public to represent it, and we'll have a civil servant that's in the reporters' unit quite candidly overturning decisions that are taken on decent merit and forcing councils up and down Scotland to allow hot food takeaways. And in the event of this one, right on the doorstep of Lasswade High School, you couldn't get any closer if you tried to. It must be all of something in the region of 50 feet for the end of Lasswade High School Centre. Now, what we had here was a civil servant in the reporters' unit quite simply ignoring everything that's in front of them and granting consent for this. And I'm not happy with the response that we've got here, because it hasn't been the ministers that have responded here, it's the chief civil servant that's responded here. Now, I thought we had agreed to write to the ministers. And I didn't understand why we seem to have a response for the Chief Civil Servant rather than the Minister.
I mean, Chair, obviously, in accordance with what I understood the committee wanted, we wrote to the Chief Planner, who obviously will be advising the Ministers. What I would say is that, again, looking very briefly at the documents published this morning, it would suggest that there has that groundswell of feeling amongst a number of councils and Cosler, as I understand, in relation to this particular issue of decisions being made by people out with the council locality, if you like, is that one of the recommendations coming up here or questions is, quote, we believe that more review decisions should be made by local authorities rather than centrally. So I think that suggests to me that the sort of collective and regular and consistent view that's come from many councils in relation to appeal decisions is obviously suggesting some change that's going to come from the ministers.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. I've got some of the ones I was going to raise it later on at the meeting regarding a decision that's in there. A decision overturned the council decision. A reporter came out, and we've had instances now, and it's really something that's bugging me, is the way that reporters, as Derek says, can come out here and overturn decisions made by local representatives. Now, we had an instance a wee bit back where Adam and I both spoke against an application that was put in for a change of use of a shop in Pennycook. Now, we spoke at the in the committee about that, and the committee unanimously agreed to refuse it. And a reporter came out, probably spent about like half an hour, and decided, no, that's okay, and allowed it. And now we've got another fast food takeaway in the town centre that doesn't really offer anything towards the town centre regeneration or anything like that, because their footfall's at night. We had another one that came up just at the tail end of the year there, where there was an orthodontist in the town centre put up a massive big blue sign in a conservation area without permission. They didn't get consent. They were told to apply retrospectively. They did so and got refused. They appealed, and the appeal didn't come to the local review board. It went straight to the... because they believe in an advertising sign, it's not under our remit to deal with that. It seems rather strange in that we can deal with other things like windows and doors and buildings and whatever, and an advertising sign we can't. They came out and they overturned it because they didn't see it as being detrimental to a conservation area. And that was against a lot of public complaints about it and raised. So, I mean, I think the point, I'm glad to hear that I didn't know there was a sort of planning review, and it's good to hear it's out this morning. But I think as a council, we have got to put in comments. Certainly, I feel strongly that the present system doesn't work for local areas, and they're consistently, as far as I can see, reporters are coming out here, spending a short space of time and overturning decisions made by local representatives and local people. So I'm quite pleased that's there, and I'd like to think that we will be putting in comments and reports to the report.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, I agree with what Councillor Rosie said, and maybe just to bring the thoughts together, what I think is wrong is that when we take a decision as locally accountable councillors who can be fired if people don't like our decisions, then somebody else can just look at it on its merits, which seems wrong. I understand why you would need to have a rigorous process of appeal, but it strikes me that unless there's something wrong with our decision, like, you know, procedurally wrong, or we've acted in a way that's against natural justice or something like that, then you shouldn't be able just to say, oh, actually, I think my decision's better. I think unless our decision is demonstrably flawed, I think it should be left alone. And I think that would be a good basis of commentary back on that report.
Thank you, Chair. I concur with my colleagues who've just spoken. There does seem to be a serious shortfall of democratic accountability in this, and it rather makes a mockery of the whole system of having an elected member planning authority and who work closely with those officials who work for any local authority who exercise their right to devolved decision-making. Within that, it seems to me that we should be making rather a louder noise about this. We have raised this issue previously, repeatedly in this committee over the years that I've served on it, but we don't seem to have made a great deal of progress. And it seems to me that in addition to making reference in response to the consultation, there might be scope for raising this as a totally separate issue on the basis that public accountability and democracy is seriously flawed by this system. There is a much larger issue at stake here at a time when, as a local authority, we're looking for far greater accountability, local engagement and local community participation in everything we do. There seems to me a strong case for moving forward with a louder voice to change this.
After we received the replies from the various authorities, I discussed this at COSLA, and it wasn't only this council that was having complaints. It was a lot of the councils felt the same as we did. So could I maybe ask you what you really want us to do here?
Just another point on that. I mean, the Scottish Government's policy is supposedly towards town centre regeneration, And they put a good bit of money into Pennycook recently by way of the Business Improvement District and with the storehouse. But to me, my personal opinion is that that's two decisions made that don't go along with that and don't sit with it. So I think there's a flaw in there. Not only if they want to, you know, are they looking at Scottish Government policy when they're coming to these decisions rather than personal decisions? So I think we are looking to sort of get some form of words, I suppose, to come before the council and something that we can go back on these issues.
Just to answer your question, Chair, a reasonable suggestion might be that perhaps Ian brings back to the next planning a draft of a submission in reply to the document that he has that takes into account what's been said today. And then because we've already given a steer on our thoughts, that puts Ian in a position where he will have hopefully quite an advanced draft to bring to the next planning committee, which can then form the basis of the response to Scottish ministers.
Yeah, just was going to take part, but you know, just like everybody seems to be agreed that we need more devolution planning authority decisions and less centralisation and less control the appeal procedure, you know, from the developer and from centralisation, and more control to this chamber and more control and more empowerment of our communities. So the planning process should be constantly devolving, not centralising.
Thank you, Chair. I don't disagree with the comments already made, but referencing my previous comment to committee, I would be most concerned, Chair, if we didn't write as a separate issue, highlighting this specific. In the almost 10 years I sat on this committee, I have seen innumerable cases where, as Councillor Rosie and others have already cited, a report has come out, perhaps had some time to look at the case notes, but actually has had no local knowledge, has not necessarily consulted with any local residents or community representatives, and makes a decision that's totally at odds with their views and this committee's views. And we work quite hard, we endeavour to incorporate local community views into our decision making on any planning application. As we all know, we are constrained by planning law, but within that we do take very strong note and incorporate that into our decision making process for any application. I know officers do too. It seems to me that in spite of all previous comments we have made as a committee and issues that have come to the attention of COSLA on this issue, it seems to me we've made no progress in a very long time, in spite of, as we heard earlier from Peter, a great deal of improvement on the planning system in general. I think this is such a matter of local democratic concern that we should be writing not just to ministers responsible for planning, but also ministers responsible specifically for democratic accountability. And I think we should raise this to cite how this is counterintuitive to a lot of the policies that the Scottish Government is currently putting in place and we are implementing to engage more closely with our communities to get more accountability and decision-making in those communities. This is totally counterintuitive to that train of action and legislation that's taking place. I feel quite strongly, Chair, with due respect to everyone present, that we should raise this at a different level in addition to the level that's already been proposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I think also central to all of this is a lack of an equal right of appeal. We've heard instances here where the developer has had their application turned down and they go to the Scottish Government for an appeal. Whereas if a developer has been given as if the application has been granted, there is no right of appeal for anybody who doesn't want that application to take place. And I think that it's not a level playing field, and I think this is a more general point than the one we were discussing earlier, and it relates more to our response to the consultation. I haven't seen the document that Ian refers to, so I don't know whether the opportunity is there for us to make that point. But certainly, I would certainly like to have this council recommending that we have an equal right of appeal built into the planning process.
Well, I think what we need to do is to read this document before we decide to do, but I suggest we do it within the next 2 to 3 weeks. Would that be acceptable?
Chair, obviously in the hands of the committee on this, maybe just to cover, in terms of the what Councillor Baxter referred to, which is third-party right of appeal, I'm not aware it's in the new document. I'm pretty certain it's not. I only had an hour or so this morning to read it, but I'm pretty certain it's not in there. And that's a matter which could be raised when you consider the report at the next planning committee, and obviously Councillor Baxter may want to bring forward views on that in terms of what response he would like the council to make. In relation to the other matter, then I'm just wondering if it's the simplest or the most efficient way is a report on this document will come before you at the end of February. Clearly, I've got a very clear steer in terms of what the committee feels about the issue of the need for decisions to be taken at the most devolved level. And I understand that and the arguments for that. The committee could at that point then decide whether, in addition to the composite response it makes on the terms of this document, whether it also wishes to reinforce that with a separate letter or separate submission, which is very clearly on that particular point, and committee could think about that at that time and come to a view. Just offering a suggestion.
Does anybody want to comment on what Ian's just said, Derek?
John, thank you for that. I agree wholeheartedly with Lisa. Here, I think we should be raising this as a significant issue on its own and separately to talk about. The fact that there is the loss of this local accountability. And the fact, and I reiterate this fact here, is that this chamber here is elected, it has professional advice given to it, it then takes decisions on it. You then have somebody who has maybe the same qualification and sometimes even lesser qualification as officers giving us advice. I'm coming along and making decisions on whether it's a sign that's out of kilter with a conservation area or what. The reality here is it's a paid civil servant that's taking that decision. There's no accountability whatsoever. Now, when we come back to this particular case and you look at it, the minute a hot food shop opens outside a school, you have the public up in arms talking about, well, Kim, but the kids aren't allowed to bring a sweetie in or anything like that, but there's a chip shop or a pizza shop or a kebab shop stuck outside the door, and it's immediately the council that the guns get swung and fired at. It's never, hang on wait a minute. And I think Lisa makes a very good point here that the local accountability and certainly stuff at the smaller end of the field, that whether it be a sign, a hot food takeaway or sign, should lie with this chamber. And if the public don't like what this chamber are doing, they can quite simply get rid of the people that think are getting the decisions wrong. They can't get rid of the civil servant, and indeed most of the reporters unit, I think, are retired out of councils here, there and everywhere and sitting on a reasonable pension. It just irks me a bit that what you have is an unelected civil servant taking a decision and yet another unelected civil servant answering and trying to justify that we do have some powers, when the reality is, as Lisa pointed out, since 1999 onwards, I've sat here and watched decisions where we've tried to stop hot food takeaways continually overtaking our town centres, continually overtaking our areas where we've got schools, including primary schools, and we've constantly seen these decisions go into the Scottish Government's Reporters Unit and be overturned without any elected member at all at council level or Scottish Government level having a say on this matter. And I think it's quite right that we should raise that matter separately and write to the ministers just pointing out that we think it is wrong. That deals with Ian's double jeopardy case, because if they didn't have an appeal, then there isn't a need to sort of deal with that. And I think Kenny making the point that we should also look to enhance the document that Ian talks about coming forward. As Ian says, it has a very strong steer as to where we think we should be going. And I think we should address it in both ways. It's not going to be any good to this administration. It will be for future administrations to deal with. However, I think it will be helpful to them. And that way, there's no this dodging who's responsible for this. You can see why the Scottish Government and Scottish Ministers want to look at the overall higher strategy for development of local plans, housing and stuff like that. You can actually see why that there should be that appeal system there for all fairness. But for stuff at this level at all, I'm sorry, it should simply be this chamber that deals with that.
Well, we're all agreed then. Right to the Minister. Okay, Ian.
Chair, just some committee, I'll obviously prepare a letter. Would that be for signing by yourself as chair, or did you want the letter circulated in advance for any comment?
Circulated in advance.
Thanks. Sorry, it was just to confirm that at the next planning, Ian's report on the document will contain a kind of suggested reply based on what's been said today. So I'm just mindful of the fact that this council's coming to an end, so time is slightly. It'd be good to have a draft response to look at for the next planning.
Yes, Jeff, through you. The document has a series of questions to sort of direct people to focus on what they're suggesting or what's being talked about and the issues being raised. So it'd be my intention to have a report which would address those questions with recommended responses for you to consider.
Okay, we'll move on to item 5.3 now.
Chair, this is the report regarding major applications. It's just your regular update for noting, but if there's any questions, I'll happily take them.
We accept the recommendation? Okay. Item 5.4.
Chair, this is the regular update on local review body decisions and appeal decisions, which again is for noting, but if there's any questions, I'll try and take them.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. Just to ask, could I have my comments that I made previously included in this, that I disagree wholeheartedly with the reporter's comments at 4.1? Just to make a point, just to make a point on it, it's not happy.
Following on from Councillor Rosie's reference to the fact that his comments would be helpfully included in this, perhaps also that he had, as others who spoke on this issue at the time, the unanimous support of the committee. It might be worth strengthening that statement in there. Thank you.
Item 5.5.
Thank you, Chair. This is a report regarding a pre-application consultation for a proposed residential development on land to the east of the junction of Greenhall Road and Barley Now Road, Gore Bridge. The purpose of this report is to afford members the opportunity to make comment on the proposals at this early stage of the planning process, in line with the guidance reported to committee in May and October 2014. As of the 24th of November 2016, the applicants are engaging in a public consultation exercise for a 12-week period. This will include a public event, which has been advertised and is scheduled to take place on the 24th of January 2017. The site is not allocated in the adopted Midlothian local plan, nor is it identified in the proposed Midlothian development plan, and as such, the principle of residential development on this site conflicts with development plan policy. However, it is worth noting that this consideration is based on the indicative information available at present. A detailed assessment of any proposal will be made once a plan application is forthcoming. It is recommended that the committee notes the provisional plan and position set out in the report. Any comments made by members will form part of the minutes of the committee meeting, and that the expression of a provisional view does not fetter the committee in its consideration of any subsequent formal planning application.
Yeah, no, not giving you any sort of strong views on this application, but you know, this is a very prominent site. You know, I don't know if you're totally aware of that. You know that, you know, the visual impact of this site will be seen from the A7, even of course to the Tesco's roundabout, and as such, sometimes that visual impact can give you a bit of reflection off of the low sunlight. You know, in that that direction. I can remember years ago thinking Greenhall High School was on fire at one time, you know, coming down that road because of the high glare. But the other thing is its proximity to the primary school. We're already building very close to the primary school with the Heart Builders site, and I appreciate that is being done and coming, you know, onwards. And then the impact on that junction, you know, very, very much concerns with the highways issues. If the access was maybe opposite Ballynow Terrace, or maybe if they were considering a site access off Greenhall Road, the major junction realignment because of the junctions into the St Andrews Primary School and the other two directions or three directions that would be involved in such an alignment. But I'm maybe thinking that it will be off the Ballynow Road. And due consideration will be taken to the house types, the layout plan, you know, and the actual density of that particular site in a future consultation.
Thank you, Chair. My wife used to work at St Andrews Primary, so no need to declare an interest these days. But I remember her telling me that in a field next to the school, some cows almost disappeared down a hole. There was some incidents about a year ago of subsidence. Would that be this field, or even if not, would it be close to an area where there may be an issue of subsidence?
I don't know, Chair. I don't know whether that's the field or not. I'll make a note of it. Chair, if we speak to the developers, we can mention it.
Sorry, Chair, I'm aware of that, you know, incidents, and it was the other side of the Greenhall Road. It happened there. They even had house builders at one time attempting to build houses there, and they ended up pouring loads of concrete down shafts, and it became an actual company went out of business shortly after that field attempt. But the land stabilisation may be a question there as well. The construction techniques that they're maybe using might be a question as well. The need for maybe a gas membrane might even be the need for a consideration for a site. But I'm presuming that all these questions will go into the kind of consultation process, and I'd hope we, you know, any development would have really good land stabilisation.
Kath?
Thank you. Traditionally, Ballynow Road has been the natural boundary for the end or edge of Gore Bridge. But then when we take into account that we ourselves are building houses between there and Gowkes Hill, does that have any influence that is no longer the periphery or the edge of the town?
No, it doesn't. The site that's come forward here, like I said, it's just at a pre-application stage. It's not identified in the local plan or in the proposed plan, so it's out with the settlement of Gorn Bridge, so it's not identified as being within the settlement boundary. Obviously, the site neighbouring it was previously an old school site, so it's a brownfield site, so that's why the council's building houses there. So it has a sort of different land use planning status to it. So that's what's happened. But no, the boundary of Gore Bridge hasn't effectively changed. It's still running along that road there.
We're taking the recommendations and also Brian's comments and about the consultation and yours as well, Ian? Yeah? Item 5.6.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for the erection of a research and imaging facility and associated buildings and works on land at Easterbush South, Easterbush, Roslyn. The research and imaging facility will support the study of the biology of large animals. The facility will have a scanning and imaging facility similar to those found in a human hospital and will house an innovation centre to deliver research, development demonstration and training on precision agriculture and engineering for the livestock, arable, horticulture and aquaculture sectors. The building will also include a space to accommodate conferences up to 100 people. The large complex of buildings are inspired by modern architectural buildings. However, the detailed design elements, roof profile and finished materials create an enhanced agricultural aesthetic that is in keeping with the character of many of the existing animal housing buildings at Easterbush. The height of the main building is 12.5 metres. The materials comprise timber cladding and metal roof panels with solar panels. The proposed development is on land allocated for bioscience industries and is part of the next phase of development of the University of Edinburgh at their Easterbush campus. The site will be accessed via an internal campus road which links to the Bush Farm Loan, which in turn connects to the A703 Seafield Moor Road and Bush Loan. There have been a number of consultation responses, including from SEPA and Transport Scotland, and there are no representations. The proposed development accords with development plan policy and complements the existing buildings and uses at the Easterbush campus. The recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions and the prior signing of a legal agreement within 6 months to secure developer contributions towards transport infrastructure.
Ian.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I'm quite happy in principle with this. I'm conscious, though, that there are a lot of people actually cycle to the Bush these days, and particularly from Edinburgh. And I know that there are conditions within this application that will lead towards funding to improve that. But I'm thinking that maybe we should be a bit more strategic and tie this in with the active and sustainable travel plan, which the council is currently developing, and maybe see if we can help cyclists come more directly rather than going by an access road that maybe adds about a mile or 2 miles or whatever to their journey if they're coming, say, from the A701. It's just something that maybe we should start to think a bit more proactively about rather than just saying, yeah, we'll take some funding and we'll use it to help cyclists in that kind of area. Because looking at the map there, it looks as if there are one or two potential access routes that may cut directly to the A701. It's just a thought, really.
Take that on board, Peter. Any other comment? That takes us on to item 5.7. Sorry?
Just to confirm, so that application is approved as per the report.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for the erection of a retail unit, a formation of access and car park, and associated works at land southwest of Tesco Superstore Dalkeith. The proposal comprises the erection of a single-storey, shallow-pitched roof retail unit in the southern part of the site, which measures approximately 50 metres by 35 metres, with a height of 7.7 metres and providing a gross floor space of 1,630 square metres. The proposed operator is Home Bargains, who sell food and non-food products. The building will have a rectangular footprint. The elevations of the proposed building are largely finished with horizontal timber effect cladding and light brown brick with a glazed entrance feature. The roof is a grey clad material. The vehicular access would be via the existing Tesco Superstore entrance onto the S Bank roundabout. 80 car parking spaces are proposed along with landscaping and boundary treatment. The site is located within the settlement boundary of Dalkeith, where appropriate forms of development would be acceptable. However, there is a fundamental planning objection to retail development on this site. The site is not in a town centre or on the edge of a town centre or an identified commercial centre, and as such is contrary to national and local planning policy, which seeks to promote a town centre-first approach to retail. And where development cannot be accommodated in a town centre, it can be considered on the edge of a town centre, at a neighbourhood centre or an identified commercial centre such as Streatham. This site is not located on any of these destinations. The proposed development has the potential to be detrimental to Dalkeith and Bonnyrigg town centres by attracting trade away from these centres. Furthermore, the proposed siting, design and materials are unimaginative and poorly relate to its surroundings. The report references that there has been one representation received in relation to the application and consultation responses as outlined in the report. However, since drafting the report, a further objection has been received from the S Bank and the New Battle Community Council, expressing concerns that the development is contrary to policies which seek to protect town centres, that the development will have a detrimental impact on existing landscaping, and that the development design will not enable appropriate planting to be undertaken. These issues have already been addressed in the report. The Community Council have also raised concerns over alcohol provisions and licensing. These are not material planning considerations and have therefore not been addressed in the report. The recommendation is to refuse planning permission for the reasons set out in the report.
Thank you, Chair. And I'll cut straight to the chase. Chairman, I wholeheartedly agree with the recommendations in here for the planners. I think we really need to, as a body, understand that we have town centres that are struggling just now, and they're struggling really badly. If you look, for example, at Dalkeith, you have now an empty, I'm going to say, was it the old Plum Centre site, which was the shop? The Melville offices are lying empty. And Bonnerig, I can't think how many years the old co-op building, although it's been used as a charity for second-hand furniture, it's been up for sale for as many years as I can remember now without anybody sort of looking at it. The market site across the road for that has just, I think, changed hands a couple of times, and there doesn't seem to be any retailers interested in shifting in there. In fact, the most recent application withdrawn had very little retail use in it. The reality here is that when Tesco's came along here and it was granted consent, and if my memory is right, it was granted consent on appeal, and we were told then there wouldn't be any real impact into the town centres. If we didn't stop developments such as this, then the reality is we'll not have any town centres. This development and this application here and the proposals that we have in front of us belong wholeheartedly in a town centre. And if we ever come to a time when we're going to allow stuff like this to go out there, then we're as well putting up a white flag and saying the town centres are dead. You watch the comments for the public out there on where they see their town centres now. It's nothing more as somewhere to go and get a hot food takeaway, whether it's Chinese, chip shops, or go and get a pizza. You'll notice there's a new Domino's opened in Dalkeith. Many folk will welcome it. Other folk are looking and just sort of say to themselves, well, wait a minute, have we not got enough places that are sort of doing this? We need to be arguing and we need to be fighting to make sure that any such investments are made in our town centres and no in out-of-town centres. I wholeheartedly agree with this and I'll be voting to refuse consent for this.
Thank you, Chair. I don't disagree with anything that Derek's just said. Councillor Milligan makes good points about the importance of the emphasis we're putting on supporting our town centres and keeping them as vibrant places, or trying to establish greater vibrancy in them. And this is totally against all the thinking that underpins that. I'm also grateful to officers for the report and the strength of the views expressed in the report, and particularly on page 72 of your agenda papers. If you look at item 6, you'll note the concern about landscaping. And landscaping, to my mind, has a very serious value that is far beyond frivolous, or whether or not we think it's pretty or not. We've heard a lot of opinion expressed by communities in this area for a very long time now about the enormity of the housing development that we're seeing across this side of our county. There's great concern at the loss of green spaces, or the loss of land, which makes communities have a sense of being able to emotionally and psychologically breathe. Having those spaces that interrupt housing developments are quite important for the well-being of people who live in these communities. And we know that's the view of the communities. They've expressed it very clearly and loudly. The local newspapers carried a number of stories over a period on this very matter. It seems to me that if we're to respect those views, and we recognise the significance of landscaping as it was thoughtfully put in place as a requirement of the planning consent that went into the Tesco development, this area, we discussed it at some length when we looked at the change of use from rather the amendment of the use of the retail area that was formerly Mayshade and is about to become another supermarket. We considered these issues very carefully and at some length, and our planning officers went to great length to emphasise the importance of landscaping at this very particularly high-profile site. It seems to me that if we don't recognise what the officers are recommending, we are really not listening to our communities as we should be. And if that was Councillor Milligan proposing to accept the recommendations and support them, I'm seconding wholeheartedly. And thank you, officers, very much for this report.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, if Councillor Milligan's proposed the recommendations and Councillor Beattie's seconded them, then I speak in support of the foregoing. I had a detailed look at this because, you know, if somebody's going to come to our community and create jobs, that's not something you can dismiss out of hand. But on the other hand, nor is it a blank cheque for any kind of development that you want. Councillor Milligan has spoken about the sequential test for the town centres under Shop 5 policy, and I agree with what he has said. And Councillor Beattie has spoken about the landscaping effect, particularly along on the A7, which I also agree with. The only part of the report really left to be spoken to is the visual amenity of what's proposed itself, which is in paragraph 8.26. And I'm grateful to the officers for setting out in detail what type of building we might expect. And I agree with the conclusions in 8.27. It doesn't sound like it would be of any benefit visually to the area. Doesn't sound like good thought has gone into what it's going to look like or how it's going to change the character of the area. And certainly as an additional reason to support the recommendations, I think the visual amenity is part of that, and I'll certainly be voting to support the recommendations.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. If we are to go against the local plan in any way, I've always maintained there have to be strong reasons, and there certainly are not strong reasons here when you read through the paper. I agree with everything Derek was saying about the Bonnerig Town Centre, the ScotMid building. I spoke to the owners years ago, it was about 4 years ago, about cleaning up the outside of that building, and I was told that they were finding it very difficult to get tenants in there, and that was why they couldn't afford the money to start it up, which is a shame. Also, it mentions here about the dependency on Tesco. So, you know, we know big supermarkets are in trouble these days. Tesco itself has been talking about closing down some of its stores, with Morrison's now opening in Dalkeith. How do we know that Tesco's is going to be there in a few years, in which case this Home Bargains would then almost certainly close down as well, and how would that leave the site? Again, I agree with the comments made on landscaping. It's from the comments by the officers. They, in 8.27, they refer to it as an unduly dominant and intrusive building. It also refers elsewhere to the quality of design, which doesn't look too great. It looks like it's going to be stick out like a sore thumb to anyone passing on the A7 or close by. Poor quality materials are referred to. Another issue which hasn't been raised but concerns me is the traffic in that area. You know, I travelled on the number 40 bus past on the way here, and will do on my way home. You're talking about another entrance to that roadway beside the petrol station. Now, it's already getting quite difficult for buses to come and go. They have to traverse that roundabout twice for every single journey, and it does concern me about the impact on traffic in that area. For that reason, I too will be supporting the planning officials on this occasion.
Thank you, Chair. I concur with all the statements that have been made regarding this particular application. If a site could have been found in Dalkeith Town Centre or even in Bonnerig Town Centre and it was a different design, I think we would have been sitting here probably quite welcoming the type of business that this store would have bought. But it isn't. They're looking out with the town centre, and everything the officer's report is saying is obviously correct. So I concur with everyone that's been said. Thank you.
Is anybody otherwise minded? Well, we support the...
Just
support the recommendation and refuse the grant of plan permission.
Thank you all very much for attending.